Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeed. And welcome to another glorious, even though I say so myself, episode of The Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. This is a special leadership reflections episode because I've been introduced by Sam Smith, who's metaphorically passed the golden baton on to Johnny Moore. What else is possible here? Johnny is a leadership facilitator and coach, visiting lecturer at the Said Business School in Oxford, and on the visiting faculty of Changemaker program at Homerton College in Cambridge too. So, Johnny Moore, you are extremely welcome to the show, and thank you for bearing with me earlier on today as I wrestled with old people and technology in my case.
No worries. I'm contractually obliged not to rush you, given that everything I do is under a flag of unhurried. I have to keep practicing.
Yes. And I'm just going to keep blowing a bit more happy smoke at you. About 12 years ago, you started hosting what you called Unhurried Conversations. It's a version of slow leadership, I think, as I understand it. And as you've just very eloquently put already, it's about rushing less to connect more. And I love the fact that even in imparting that, I'm beginning to slow down, which is wonderful. So you're very welcome to the show. This is a Leadership Reflections episode where we'll discover and uncover your leadership lessons learned along your way in your very illustrious career of having trained on all parts of the planet, it would seem. I know you've been to the Solomon Islands, Australia, Africa, Middle East, Europe, North America, and. So hopefully you feel there's enough happy smoke blown at you, Johnny.
That's as much happy smoke as I can cope with anymore, and I'd start to panic.
And blush, no doubt as well. If someone doesn't have a way of connecting with you and they just meet the wonderful you as you walk and talk around where you normally go in Cambridge, and they bump into you and they find you obviously intrinsically interesting, what's your favourite way of answering the question, oh, hello, what do you do? I know it's clunky, but we've all got to find a way of either avoiding or answering that.
Yeah. Do you know, I think it's still clunky. I still haven't got that right. And I guess it's because I stubbornly refuse to have an elevator pitch. So what I often fall into doing, and it's very lazy, is I say, well, I'm a facilitator. And then I look to see if that means anything to them. And half the time it does, in which case job done. And half the time it doesn't, in which case I slightly elaborate. And to be honest, I try and get off that plinth as fast as possible.
I completely concur with you. I ask it as a facetious question because I know that it's the question that everybody hates, including me, actually. And I love the fact you just said, I get off that plinth as soon as I can. And like you, we're very like-minded and kindred spirits. I think you are an enabler, a curator of spaces, and it's all about collaboration. And, you know, it's navigating through the tension with more fun and creativity, which is what you're all about. And that resonated and spoke very clearly to me too. So Sam Smith, what's your connection to him? Because he very generously said, oh, you should meet and speak to Johnny Moore.
I think my first connection with Sam was drinking his coffee when he was in the coffee business at a retreat called Yellow, hosted by my friend Rob Poynton. And if I remember rightly, I drank his coffee, but Sam wasn't there. But Sam had provided the coffee, and then I must have run into him at some online yellow thing and hit it off with him very quickly, because he's a lovely fellow and very easy to hit it off with.
And similarly, our vibe attracts our tribe. And as soon as we connected a few weeks ago off the back of, I love the fact, the enigma of, I drank his coffee, but he wasn't there.
That could be the opening line of a book, couldn't it? Of a chapter.
It really could.
Drank his coffee, but he wasn't there.
And storytelling is the thing that's going to keep on giving. And it's my absolute pleasure and delight to be able to curate you, Johnny Moore, particularly through the storyscape of the Good Listening To show. There's going to be a clearing a tree, a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for. So just before we get on the open road of that, if I can just ask you another slightly facetious question. How's morale? What's your story of the day, please, Johnny Moore?
Oh, morale today is good. I noticed how good it was today, and I think it got better and better. I went for a long swim and I did 60 lengths, which is a sign that I was really into it. Some days I'm not. And I just noticed cycling back through the rain in Cambridge, I felt really viscerally alive. So for whatever reason, I'm feeling quite perky today.
And you're very active. That's a cycle ride and a long swim.
I have eventually learned that it's very, very important for me to be active. I spent a large part of my life, whenever people would suggest going for a walk, I would just pull a face and go, why would I want to do that? Because I definitely used to be one of those sort of brain on a stick characters. And I have, it's taken me a long time to unlearn it. But now I'm quite ridiculously active compared to previous versions of myself.
And you're looking very svelte, trim, and yes, battered by the elements as well, because you've got wet twice in the pool and also in the rain of Cambridge as well.
Yeah, good soaking.
And you do a lot of your videos outdoors, which I do too. So whenever you're letting your thinking unfold, you do a lot of riffing as you're walking normally by a river scape, I notice.
I used to make them at home, and then on a whim, I just got this urge to try doing them walking. And immediately, I just thought, oh, this is so much more fun. I felt more alive doing the walk. I had a nice riverside walk with lots of trees around me. And I realized that part of the selling point is people quite enjoy watching me dodge the hazards as I'm walking along. You might think this noise and distraction actually adds to the appeal. So that was quite amusing.
And I love the slapstick element in that. And also on LinkedIn, when I was researching you, you said, as Monty Python say, we're all individuals. And that really immediately spoke to me, because my all-time living comic hero is Michael Palin. He was at the top of my tree, talking about trees within clearings, which we'll get into in a minute. But when I first started the podcast about 3.5 years ago, Michael Palin is up in the canopy of my tree as the pinnacle. So the day I can speak to Michael Palin, we'll know that I've made it. Thank you. So let's get on the open road. You talked about having trees and things to stumble over. So there is a clearing with a tree in it, and that's what this is about. So let's get you on the open road of the storyscape of this. So first of all, Johnny Moore, what is a clearing or serious happy place for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
I stumbled into my happy place a few days ago, actually. I'd been in the doldrums a bit, so I'm not perky every single day. Sometimes I'm not. But I had breakfast with my friend Alison here in Cambridge, and we just get on really well. And about 3 minutes of the conversation, I said, stop, I'm just in my happy place. I feel like a man who's been in the desert and has stumbled on an oasis. And I just love this, because sometimes I just find myself in conversation with someone where there's just flow and energy. It's not exactly overexcited. It's just that we say something to each other and you can watch the other person's brain engage, turn it over, savor it, chew it up, offer something back. It happened with Alison. I remember it happening in New York about 12 years ago. Same experience. I was talking to my friend Alain, and I suddenly went, oh, this is what I've been missing, this kind of conversation.
What a great answer. In all my 220-odd episodes, no one has ever said their clearing is the magic point within mid-conversation. That's a great answer. So it's that moment of just sudden, abrupt happiness in mid-flow of conversation is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I feel slightly tearful as you point that out to me, because I think it's so easy for me and all of us to get attached to things and places. But it's in relationship that we find life, I think.
I love that. And also to the whole construct and concept of slow leadership and being unhurried and just be present. And yes, so I love that, the sort of brain resonance and chime and illumination that happens if you can suddenly pull yourself up to, just a minute, it's happened, we're happy, we're in conversation. So I'm now going to metaphysically and literally arrive with a tree in your clearing, which is a wonderful sort of mystic, almost Mist of Avalon space. It's that moment of magic when two people are connecting. So if I may barge in with a tree, I'm now going to shake your tree a bit existentially to talk about now a lovely, juicy storytelling construct called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You've had 5 minutes or as long as you've needed since you've known that you're going to be my guest to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you, 2 things that never fail to grab your attention and borrowed from the film Up. That's a bit, well, squirrels, you know what, never fails to grab your attention. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Johnny Moore, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. It's not a memory test, so rest assured, we'll curate you through it gently. But over to you to interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree as you see fit.
Well, it was a very interesting structure, and I quite liked that I've had it for a while now because our original date was postponed. And I laugh at myself because I tend to be a bit reluctant to adopt structures, but I recognize a little bit of structure is obviously quite helpful. And I really enjoyed figuring out the 4 things that have shaped me. I've actually written them down so I don't forget. And I could name 10 or 7 or 3, but let's go with these 4. The first one is encounter groups. It's a group therapy process that I did 25 or maybe 30 years ago. They have quite a controversial history. If you research them, you'll find out that done unethically, they have tremendously bad vibes, but done ethically. And I think the ones I went to were very ethically run. They were very skillfully run. They are really amazing. And we had a group of 24 people. We would meet every week. For most weeks of the year, for maybe 30 weeks of the year anyway. And encounter work is about being very present to what's going on in the room and being willing to challenge each other, often on quite specific aspects of behavior that we'd seen. And you'd have these quite charged conversations, but in this space that felt, for want of a better word, safe, that was well structured so that you could do difficult conversations with some guardrails.
Yeah.
And people would just get encountered on really, really amazing things. Like someone might be encountered just on the way that they styled their hair, which you might not think much of, but, you know, they'd say, I've noticed the way you style your hair and it's not quite consistent with what I hear about you as a, and I just wondered. And the person, you might think the person would go, how dare you? But in fact, they went, oh, that's interesting. Well, I suppose I do. And then just by talking about how they style their hair, you would unpack more of their personality and we would unpack more of how we felt about them. And you start learning a lot more about yourself, about the little things that create relationship. It was actually just an amazing experience. And I realized doing this little prep for you, Chris, that it really has shaped me in ways that I didn't quite grasp at the time. And I think what it's given me is, for good or ill, a certain level of impatience with humdrum routines and conversations, because I've got such a taste for the excitement of real. The word that's coming out of my mouth is intimacy. I wish I had a better word, but that's the one that's popped out. It's too late now. That kind of real human exciting contact.
Yes.
And it was a contributory factor to me not being able to take advertising seriously anymore after it. I just couldn't take those sorts of slightly over important meetings about logo sizes. I felt like they weren't interesting enough and the group dynamics were more interesting. That's why I became a facilitator. And I think that year of encounter has seriously shaped me.
And very interesting how it needs, obviously, to be very deftly facilitated. You talked about having guardrails in place, because you can imagine there'd be all sorts of unconscious bias and just suddenly noticing that someone's hair's different. So it would have to be very, very deftly and well facilitated and delighted for you that it was, and therefore imparted the same magic that you've passed the golden thread of in your own work as well. It's about curating spaces that enable others to truly connect.
It's a real paradox, isn't it? I just think it's a paradox of safe, but not so safe that nothing happens.
Yes.
I think I saw something this morning that Priya Parker has a phrase which I quite liked. Hospitable but charged. Enough charge for something for there to be growth and challenge and excitement, but hospitable enough that people don't feel like they go too far on a limb.
Yeah, so there's still safety implicit within it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like those three concentric circles I like of comfort, risk, panic. No one wants anyone to...
we're all That's a good way of putting it.
We're all going to do much better if we spend our lives risking something in order to connect. So it's a lovely currency and elixir of connection, which is the through line already that I'm getting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wonderful. So that's a delightful first shapeage. What's next?
Next is improv. This was, I suppose, this was about 25 years ago as well. I was in a quiet patch with work, classic freelance life. So I had some time on my hands, and someone had mentioned this guy to me. His name's Denzel Myers, and said he and just told me he was very interesting and made him sound interesting. I thought no more about it, but I saw an email that he'd sent out saying, "Oh, I'm going to this conference about improv in organizations in November in San Diego." And I thought, "Oh, I've got nothing better to do. I think I might go. I might find out who this Denzel character is in improv. That sounds interesting. I'll go." So I booked the flights on a whim, about 10 days away. And then I thought, oh, maybe I should find out what this improv is. So I found an improv acting workshop in Islington, where I was living at the time, spent the weekend with Sprout Improv, found it really fun and interesting and exciting. I mean, I knew what improv was, but I'd never done it. And the conference was just amazing. I remember a specific moment where a guy called Izzy Gazelle was running a session on improv where he...
What a great name, Izzy Gazelle.
It's a great name, isn't it? And I remember him, somebody at the back of the room chuckled, and I remember him very deftly saying, "Oh, that's interesting. Tell me about your laughter. That's a teachable moment," he said. And that was when I went, oh, I see.
Yes.
Improv is this thing of noticing, and it has a connection to encounter work, funnily enough. It has this thing about you start with something that you might pass over as small and inconsequential, but if you dwell on it, unhurriedly, I suppose, you start to unpack the way everything's connected to everything. So it was kind of like another angle on the same principle of sort of finding aliveness, I suppose.
Yes.
And I was just going to add that what I think I've now got to realize about improv is often associated with that game show, Whose Line Is It Anyway, which is, if you like, a comic and manic form of improv. But what interests me is sort of slower, less manic improv, and not necessarily comic. It's just this capacity to notice that we have more choices moment by moment than we realize, and that the key thing is not to drive a narrative, but to connect with your scene partner in a show, or with your colleagues if it's at work.
Through the elixir and magic of yes and, yes and, yes and as a mindset.
Sort of yes and, or yes and, I suppose it's yes and, or being affected. It's just attention to small things and noticing your responses, and, to use your word from earlier, a kind of curating of your experience, if you like, by slowing down enough to pay attention.
Yes. And were you aware that I run a comedy improvisation company in Bristol called Instant Wit? Had we made that connection?
I was. I'd forgotten, but you did tell me, yes.
And so that's another extraordinary,
another
wonderful connection point and coincidence of the fact we have that currency in common. And have you heard of Paul Z. Jackson, who's a wonderful...
Who hasn't heard of Paul Z. Jackson? He was there in San Diego all those years ago. He was definitely one of the people. He and I were the token Englishmen at this otherwise quite American event.
Yes, and because Paul Z. Jackson introduced me to the whole world, I have a lot to thank him for. And in fact, he's previously guested as well. And I now run a company called Instant Whip that I've been running for about 35 years, co-running with a wonderful person called Stephanie Weston. There's lots of stuff in common here. This is lovely. I'm going nom, 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 nom.
No, we're horribly enmeshed with each other, Chris.
We are.
You're going to have to watch out. We don't get completely entangled here.
Yes. And number three, please. I've got a bell that I forgot to get out for when I get stuck in a rabbit hole. This is it. It's cashier number three, please. So, yes, shapeage number three.
No, ring your bell and then I'll come in. My timing's a bit off today. I like that bell. As I listened to them, I felt like taking slightly more risks. So the number one, the third thing is Oxford, where I went to university. And I always feel a bit cautious about this because I don't want it to sound like, oh, look at me, I went to Oxford. Because I think the curse of these sorts of institutions is the elitism that they drill into you. And when I say that Oxford shaped me, it was for sort of good and ill, because my experience there was in a way a kind of classic awkward grammar school boy struggling a bit at this then very public school dominated institution. It was the best of times and the worst of times. But I can't deny that has influenced me. It's influenced the way I think. You know, I think the place where you do your early adulthood has sort of deep resonance for you. Whenever I go back there, I can feel stuff stirring in me. It's sort of a nostalgia, and some of it is pleasurable memories and some of it is quite traumatic memories.
And interesting, you've ended up in Cambridge as well, and you're attached to business schools in both environs, actually.
Yes, attached slightly loosely, I would say. But yes, I decided I kind of wanted to go back to a student-y place when I left London. And I thought if I went to Oxford, people would accuse me of going back in time.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd go to Cambridge then. Same difference.
Same difference.
Of course.
Wonderful.
Yeah, of course, they're similar and different. It's quite interesting. But they're very, very similar in some ways, but actually quite different in others, I think.
And reading behind the lines of where you're from, because it's perceived as being a sort of public school environment, you strike me as being slightly Alan Bennett-y in the sense that you might have come from a more working class background to then suddenly do social mobility through education. I hope that's not too judgmental, but it's what I'm noticing.
No, I'm not probably as gifted as Alan Bennett, but I think there's a stream of the likes of us who went there from state schools who never quite fitted in. And I suppose that's part of the shaping that Oxford has given me. It hasn't been a ticket to the higher levels of the establishment. It's actually played into a pattern that I have of often feeling like the little child and outside the shop window, breathing onto it, not quite able to get in. The sense of there's an in crowd, but I want to be, but I can't. I can see them, but I can't quite join. And I think a lot of those of us who went to Oxford from that kind of background left feeling we'd never quite made it. I always had this feeling that there was a script that some people had been given in Oxford, but no one had bothered to tell me.
The script of privilege, if I may say, is one way of interpreting that. But also I have discovered that one of the best testing grounds and proving grounds for facilitators as enablers is their capacity to be outliers, outside looking in. So I love that idea of you breathing frost onto the glass, but actually being able to actually curate them once they've come out of the shop in a space that is a facilitated space.
Yes, I think one of the things I hope I'm good at as a facilitator is I'm quite good at imagining what it might be like to feel excluded. I mean, I appreciate with Oxford, it's like levels of privilege that we're comparing. But I think I've always, when I'm running things, I'm always sort of aware of, does everyone feel like they can join in with this?
Yes.
I'm aware that some people might not want to play a game, so I try and make it possible not to.
Yes.
I try and account for all the different levels of energy in the room because I know what it's like to feel excluded.
Yes. And the worst type of training or coaching is when people feel like they're sort of horses at the vet receiving medication. I think it's always much better if people have got a choice or an option to get involved, participate or not.
That's a very powerful metaphor. I might borrow that one.
I am Captain Analogy and Metaphor, as indeed you. I'm loving this. Thank you. We could be on to shapeage number four, please.
So I thought carefully about this one, and I thought I might talk about anxiety. And then I thought, no, actually, I'm going to say it's despair. I think I ought to cop to that's something that has shaped my life a lot. It's not possible, is it, to know for sure how one compares my internal experience with the internal experience of anyone else. But I think I'm one of the more anxious people, anxious and neurotic people in the world. I've always had to manage levels of panic and anxiety and catastrophic fantasizing. And I often feel something that I think a lot of people would call despair. And I think with the passage of time, I've slowly got better at accepting despair, something that's never going to completely vanish from my life.
And is that about just your perception of the human condition, or are you talking about sort of a depressive tendency, or just because I love the fact it's framed as despair? So just tell this, just unpack a little bit of the story behind the story, your use of the word despair.
It feels like the best word I can use to describe what I often experience. I often wake up in the middle of the night with this. Wake up and just feel very anxious, very easy then to start thinking about mistakes and things that might go wrong in the future and things that are wrong in the past, and get lost in a kind of rumination that's very unsettling. And, you know, sometimes that has felt, there have been times in my life when I felt absolute deep panic. You call it panic, call it despair, almost sort of feeling like helpless, sort of existential angst. I'm sure that quite a lot of us do. These are difficult times. We do feel it at times. And I think I'm learning the wisdom of, I can't chase it away. I have to find a way to respond to it. What I found myself doing, just joining the dots here a bit, is I'd realize I'm going to have to improvise tonight. The things that calmed me down last night aren't working tonight. So I'm going to have to use my improv muscles and try to see if I can find a thing that allows me to settle down. And I think just as I talked about knowing what it's like to feel excluded, I think knowing the sort of darker, shadowy emotions, if you want to call them that, and being willing to be with them, I think means that I'm reasonably good at sensing when people in around me in groups might be feeling some distress, and then being able to adjust to it, you know, in a reasonably competent and empathetic way.
That's so very relatable. In that's spoken to me in so many different ways, because I too at 4 a.m. have my deepest pockets of existential angst, and the world is totally out of kilter, and that's very relatable. And I love the fact that you're able to then trust your inner genius to find sort of slightly wibbly ways out of the maelstrom, and trusting your inner genius this morning of, I'll go for a long swim and a soggy bike ride and the world will set itself right. Wonderful. The great shapages. Thank you so much. So now we've shaken that part of your tree. Now it's three things that inspire you, Johnny Moore.
Well, the first one is going to get you saying that thing about how many things we have in common, because I've written here Michael Palin. Wow. And indeed, the whole Monty Python thing. But Palin is the epitome for me of a capacity to bring a sense of absurdity in order to see truth. I mean, that's the great thing about absurdity. It actually makes us aware of something that is true by puncturing a ritual or routine that actually doesn't have life in it and making it look ridiculous. And what I love about Michael Palin is he's so good-natured. And I think I share some of that quality of mischievous humor. And I think I've got better at being more like Michael Palin and maybe a bit less like John Cleese on a bad day. In the way that I bring that mischief into the world, if you like.
Oh, I love that you've said that. And just to explain also, he's like Stan Laurel, but now a reincarnation of that humility, kindness, warmth.
Yes, because he doesn't take himself too seriously, does he?
Yeah.
Except when he does, which is also quite fascinating. You know, there's that very famous TV episode after they brought out Life of Brian where he takes on the Bishop of Southwark. And you can see he's quite unusually indignant. And it's quite nice to see that side of him occasionally as well.
Yes. I love that you've cited Michael Palin as being one of your influences. Fantastic. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Next, influencing?
Resonance is what I was thinking. It's something I've noticed more and more and more and delight in. So resonance is something that I often experience in conversations where, for example, I say something that I'm thinking, and then another person in the conversation might just be slightly recapitulating what I've said. And sometimes they recapitulate it sort of word for word, but of course, in their own voice and with their own somaticness and body expressions and stuff. And I go, oh, that's really good. What I've just said now sounds more important because of this person sometimes repeating it in their own words, but sometimes even when they repeat it in my words, it adds something to it. And I go, oh, that's that resonance. I can feel it in my heart, or I feel tearful. It's almost like a thing I've known expressed rationally, I can now feel more deeply because it's been passed to and fro in, I was talking earlier about in relationship. I mean, that's what I think is so important about conversations that we so easily dismiss. We think, oh, it's all about adding information to things. No, I think it's about so much more than that. And so moments of resonance, I often get very excited when I feel them because they feel very heartening to me.
Yes. And I love the amplification that's implicit, where something gets resonating and it becomes a third thing that's bigger than the two of you that first stated it, had it reflected, and then it's grown even more. I love that. Lovely. And now third influencer.
This just came to me the other day, and it's quite a small thing, but I noticed that I just delight in seeing small kids with their parents. I mean, often at the weekend at the pool, there's a lot of family stuff going on. And I just noticed, delighted to see this huge bloke holding by his hand a little tiny person walking in that slightly toddler-like way. And I just find that, I'm not a parent, I just look at that and I just think, oh, little boy, so delightful, little girl, so sweet. They're so full of, you know, the joy and the spontaneity. It's hard not to be. I don't even know if I'm influenced by it. I just know that I look and I go, oh, isn't that delightful?
Oh, that's lovely. And if I may ask, not being a parent, was that a deliberate thing or just how life panned out? Or
I think it's kind of how life panned out.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, they're both wonderfully trivial things. Onion soup. If I see onion soup on the menu anywhere, I often look at a menu and go, is there onion soup? I mean, probably not if I'm a Mexican. And I go, ooh. And I've become a bit of a sort of, I wouldn't say exactly a connoisseur, but I'm very attentive to onion soup and whether it's got real flavour or not.
And we're talking,
often it's a bit bland. But
and we're talking cheese and croutons and the whole experience.
Yeah, the whole nine yards. I remember a meal in an otherwise very disappointing trip to the Caribbean, which wasn't remotely as glamorous as I expected. The highlight was the phenomenal onion soup we stumbled on at some restaurant somewhere. I remember nothing else except for this fabulous onion soup.
And there's a delicious irony that it wasn't in France, because that's where you'd expect French onion soup.
No, it wasn't. No, it might have been a French island in the Caribbean. I can't remember.
It was the thing I most enjoyed. In fact, actually, the only thing I ever enjoyed in the chain that used to be Café Rouge, the fact you could go in and have an onion soup. So that's very relatable. You talk about resonance. I'm just feeling much resonance in so much of what you're saying, which is my instinct all along in thinking Johnny Moore's going to be a wonderful guest. Thank you for that.
Big people with children would make the initialism BPWC, right?
Yes.
Whenever someone uses a phrase, there's a part of my mind that goes, does that make an acronym? Or technically an initialism, if it doesn't make a turn itself into a word. I'm constantly going, when someone says something I like, I go, oh, does that make a, how does that sound if I turn it into an acronym?
BPWC, I love that.
Big people with children. Oh, it's a BPWC moment. I remember when I was in advertising and I was much more of a yuppie and I was much more avaricious. When we ran into problems with a client and we couldn't think of anything else, we'd just say to each other, BTBL. Buy the lunch. And we would buy them lunch. My partner at the time was very good at being jolly at lunch, and I wasn't, so I just let him run the show. And what we found often was at the end of a really jolly lunch where we scrupulously didn't talk about work at all, by the time coffee came around, they'd be inventing things they could buy from us.
No one's ever said that either. This is wonderful. And thank you for the two acronyms. I love it. Give me the one about lunch again. Let's buy them lunch. Here's a...
buy the lunch, BTBL.
BTBL, and may that help all of us get more work in future by BTBLing our more tricky clients. I love that. And now, a quirky or unusual fact about you, Johnny Moore, a leadership facilitator that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
I once took part in a flying circus over Vancouver Harbour.
Ooh.
Literally, I was sitting in a little prop plane in a circuit of planes flying over a firework display.
Wow.
Over, is it Vancouver Harbour or Victoria Harbour? One of those in British Columbia. Although the kicker is, and this, I put this in one of my videos, that sounds fantastic. Actually, it was a very disappointing experience, but I sat in the plane thinking, this will make a good story, but actually, I'm a bit meh. I'm not really feeling it. It's not as exciting experience as I can make it sound. It was a precursor of social media in a way.
Yes, and how did you get in the cockpit in the first place? That's an unusual thing to find yourself in a flying circus.
Oh, it's a long story, but I learned to fly a long time ago. I got my private pilot's license, and I then took a holiday in British Columbia to have a go at flying float planes.
Oh, that's resonant too. I wanted to, as soon as I was in Vancouver and wanted to be one of the island pilots as we went to Salt Spring Island.
Yeah, I was extremely incompetent. I wasn't that good at PPL. Float planes are very difficult things. They're very, very different from a regular plane. I did see some amazing sights, though. I had some amazing flights. The thing I learned about float planes, because they've got these giant things in the water, they need very long takeoff runs. But their landing runs are shorter. So you have to be very careful not to land in a lake that you can't subsequently take off from.
Good advice. We have shaken your tree. Okay, now we're going to stay in the clearing, going back to the construct, and we're going to move away to talk about alchemy and gold now. When you're at purpose and in flow, Johnny Moore, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
What I think comes to mind are what I call tiny moments of facilitation, where I just respond to the smallest sort of thing I'm noticing and just find a way of responding to it. I mean, often the trick with facilitation is not to do too much. But the moments where I decide to do something interesting, and to give an example, I was at a gig a while ago where I was notionally facilitating the day, but there was a big chunk where I wasn't really facilitating. It was all predetermined. A presentation was going on. Something had gone wrong with the timing and they were all thrown off kilter. And they sort of didn't do what they were planning to do. And they stumbled into a Q&A session. And I was sitting at the back. It was none of my business. But I started to feel fidgety because I could sense this Q&A was getting into what I call a plenary vortex, where two or three people were talking a lot and everyone else was kind of starting to sink and wondering when their coffee was coming. And it's almost like before my brain decided, my body made me fairly quietly move nearer the front than the back, because I just felt like, oh, And then my client, who'd been inadvertently chairing this Q&A, noticed me. And then we made eye contact. And she said, oh, I think I'm going to let Johnny host this because I think he's got more experience, which is kind of what I wanted.
Yes.
So I then went up into the chair and I thought, what am I going to do? And I just did a little thing. So I just thought, how can I do that? I said, so I'm just going to pause. I can see that you've got a bit more to say, so we'll come back to you. I also sent one or two other people. Could you raise your hand if you also want to join in? So, yeah, okay. I said, but maybe some of you are concerned that we do get to coffee on time. Big sniggers from the room. Okay, so I'm right about that. So, look, here's what we'll do. We've got 15 minutes. We'll get to coffee on time. We'll come back to you. We'll make sure we include you and we'll give you a chance to respond. Does that sound okay? Good. And then the rest of it, I don't think I said anything. I just sort of looked at people, made little gestures to them. And
very
I just
clever.
Sort of deftly reversed what I think could have been a plenary vortex into something manageable. And I loved about it because it was, I was figuring it out as I did it. I didn't sit in my chair thinking, oh, there's seven steps to execute here. Yeah. I just felt my way one step at a time. And it's like a moment of coming out of the background and into the foreground. And it's that's a fascinating thing about facilitation, is the choice about when to move forward and how, and when to vanish.
And I was going to use the word deftly just before you said it, thinking how deft that was, that you sort of, I suppose, recontracted with everyone's willingness to give up the next 15 minutes of their life in a way that everybody became happy with. Lovely. The art of facilitation right there with you, Johnny Moore. Fantastic. I'm going to award you with a cake next. Do you like cake, Johnny?
Do you know, it's not my favourite thing, cake. Donuts, yes.
So let's be indulgent then with the final suffused metaphors of the storytelling thrust within this. You get to put a cherry on your donut now, metaphorically. And what's a favourite inspirational quote, first of all, that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
The nearest I could come to this, and it's not exactly a sort of soaring one, but it's a very astute observation from a brilliant, brilliant and somewhat neglected improv guru called Viola Spolin, because she was one of the great founders of improv, but she doesn't get as much press as Keith Johnson, who was the other big guru. And she wrote a book about what she'd learned from teaching kids drama, and it's full of wisdom. And she has this quote, which I wrote down. It is highly possible that what is called talented behavior is simply a greater individual capacity for experiencing, which is a lovely slow improv insight, I think.
Yes, it speaks beautifully to your slow, you know, unhurried conversations, raison d'etre. Lovely. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, Johnny?
So I thought about this and I realized the trouble with advice is mostly I'm not able to listen to it. Unless it comes with perfect timing, it's not very helpful to me. And I actually went away and thought, I actually think I might have misheard, because I went with the question, what's the advice I'd give myself? If I could go back in time, I would go back to when I was in Oxford, but I wouldn't give myself any advice. I'd wait until I was asleep, and then I'd lie down next to myself in bed, and I'd wrap my arms around me to give me some deep existential comfort, because I think that's what I needed more than advice. And I can't help thinking that a lot of us probably need that more than advice a lot of the time.
And that's such a wonderful solution, potentially, in your own framing of that, for your own despair existentially in the dead of night. You need to give yourself a hug because it's going to be okay.
It is often something like that. It's like a sort of somatic, either being hugged or feeling some capacity to hold myself.
Lovely.
Will often be what I need rather than thinking any longer, thinking more about what I could do.
Very interesting. My daughter came home recently and pointed something out. However we're feeling, to add on the tag at the end of it, and that is okay, is a really lovely way of calming, soothing and making sense of the world existentially, because it's good in the brilliant times and it's good in the worst of, as you said, the Dickensian, it was the best of times,
yeah.
It was the worst of times.
I'm going to file that under BPWC.
Pardon me?
Big People with Children.
Yes.
Chapter 2, the brilliant things they say.
Yes. She's 25 and is a wonderful, wonderful, gifted primary school teacher. And so that's wonderful.
I'm going to have a longer acronym now. BPWAC, Big People with Adult Children.
Johnny, this is delightful. We're ramping up to Shakespeare shortly to talk about legacy. But just before we do that, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. Now you've experienced this from within, who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to in order to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
Well, I think you should talk to my relatively recent but good friend, Mark McCartney, who is, I think he has an absolute genius for what Viola Spolin pointed to, a huge capacity to experience. And he's able to sort of sit with the full range of feelings and be curious and open to them, which is, I think, just a, you know, it's a delightful and quite remarkable skill. And you often hear people described as good listeners, but I think he's demonstrably a really good listener. He runs his own podcast. His title, I think, is What Makes a Good Life? So wow. It's a kind of beautiful philosophical inquiry. And he's one of my, he's another Happy Place person to speak to. Very hard to have a conversation without Mark that isn't delightful and mind expanding.
What a great accolade to project towards him. And thank you so much. That's a real gift. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's prestige and all the billy players, we'll talk about legacy now. So Johnny Moore, leadership facilitator, author of Unhurried and all about unhurried conversations, how would you most like to be remembered?
Remembered. Part of me goes, well, I don't care. I'll be dead. You can think what you like. But if I were vain enough, I thought, well, I'd probably like to be remembered with joy and a degree of bafflement.
What a great thing, with joy and with bafflement. That's a sublime epitaph. I think if you haven't already written that down, you should write it down.
I just throw one thing in because it triggered a memory from Oxford. In my first year, when I was there, the first 2 weeks, I just wanted to go home. Every night I rang home and said, bring me home. I can't cope. I don't understand all these confident public school boys. And one of the reasons I survived is the guy in the room next to me was a guy called Gordon Milne, who was a delightful guy. He was a public school boy, as it happened. And he kind of really got me without ever saying anything. And he'd occasionally open the door to my room and just say, progress by stealth, John. Progress by stealth, which I think connects to joy and bafflement. I've always had that. I've always been quite interested in biding the time and then surprising people.
Where can we find out all about you and your wonderful work, Johnny Moore, on the old hinterweb?
JohnnyMoore.com, spelt with as many letters as possible. or if that's too difficult to remember, unhurried.org is where I put a lot of my stuff about Unhurried. And if you go to either of those, you'll end up in all the other bits and pieces that I do.
Wonderful. As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, special Leadership Reflections, a series strand episode, is there anything else you'd like to say, Johnny?
I was thinking I better make sure I've had enough sunblock on because I tend to burn in the sunshine. I think I'm absolutely done. It was fun. It felt very alive, which is good because finding aliveness is a big thing for me. So I felt very alive doing it, Chris. Thank you.
I will take that as a very generous compliment. Thank you so much. That was lovely.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. I've been Chris Grimes. But most importantly, that's Johnny Moore, Mr. Unhurried Conversations and his book Unhurried. Thank you very much indeed. Good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Brand Strand Founder Stories, for business owners like you to be able to tell your company story, talk about your purpose, and amplify your brand. Together, we get into the who, the what, the how, the why you do what you do. And then, crucially, we find out exactly where we can come and find you to work with you and to book your services. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.